Module 9, the possibilities. This section covers a few of the possible proceedings an application may get caught up in during examination or after issuance. The proceedings are covered briefly in this module. All is not lost after a final rejection is sent out. The applicant may opt to appeal the examiner's rejection. Discover the ins and outs of protest. These may be submitted when a member of the public believes the subject matter in a pending application is unpatentable. Third parties may contribute to the quality of issued patents by submitting pre-issuance submissions during the examination of the application. What if a member of the public believes the subject matter in an already issued patent is unpatentable? They can file a re-examination. Learn the details of filing re-examinations. Patent owners may request a supplemental examination to ask the USPTO to consider information and related issues concerning the patentability of the application. Prior to the America Invents Act, the first to file may not always have been the one awarded priority in certain instances. Learn about interferences. Derivation proceedings help ensure that the first person to file an application is the true inventor. We'll cover these in this module. Learn about the new trial proceedings, which include inter partes review proceedings, post-grant review proceedings, and the transitional program for covered business method patents. Appeals. Let's pretend for a moment that you file an application and things just don't go all that smoothly. You keep receiving your office actions and desperately try to correct all that is wrong, but the examiner sends you a final rejection anyway. After your claims have been rejected at least twice, you may appeal from the decision of the examiner. The first step in this time-consuming and expensive process is to send in a notice of appeal. The notice of appeal must be filed within the period for reply set in the last office action. Otherwise, your application will become abandoned. The notice of appeal really only serves as a notice to the PTO that an appeal will be filed. Therefore, it merely needs to refer to the appropriate application and state that an appeal will be filed. Once the notice of appeal is sent in, the applicant will only have 2 months to file the appeal brief. The appeal brief is an interesting and complex document. The main point of the brief is to state the reasons why the claim should not be rejected. It must present arguments responsive to every ground of rejection stated by the examiner in the office action from which the appeal has been taken. It's up to the appealant to present arguments as to why each rejected claim is patentable. From here, the examiner may address the appeal brief. If the examiner chooses to reply, then the appealant may file a reply brief, challenging the examiner's response. If the appeal continues, it will be the Patent Trial and Appeal Board, or PTAB, who determines the fate of the application. The board may side with the appellant and decide that the examiner was wrong in rejecting the claims. Alternately, they may side with the examiner and agree that the claims, in fact, should be rejected. In addition, the board may also find new grounds for a rejection. If the board happens to find a new rejection, the applicant may request that the examiner reconsider the matter. The applicant may also request a rehearing by the board within the 2 months following the decision by the board. If the board decides that no claims stand allowed, then the proceedings are considered terminated and the application will be abandoned. If at least one allowed claim remains in the application, because rejections are always made on a claim-by-claim basis, then the application will not be abandoned, but may issue as a patent. Protest. If a competitor finds out that a particular application exists and believes it should not issue as a patent, they may send in a protest. A protester must have a good reason as to why the pending application should not be allowed. Valid protest reasons include information concerning the patentability of the subject matter, for example, if it was on sale or published more than a year before the filing of the application, or if the inventorship is inaccurate. A protest must identify the application in question and list the evidence, whether it be a patent, a publication, or any other information used to show that the subject matter is not patentable. It should include a copy of these incriminating items and must explain their relevance. In addition, the protest must be serviced to the applicant in order to make them aware of the incriminating prior art. If it is not possible to service the protest to the applicant, two copies of it must be mailed to the PTO. Once the PTO receives the protest, they will determine whether or not it is of significance with regards to the patentability of the subject matter. After sending in the protest, the protester has no further involvement and does not need to file anything further. Another point to note about protests is that any member of the public can submit one against any pending application. The key is that the application must be pending. A protest must be submitted prior to the mailing of the notice of allowance in order for it to be considered. The best part about a protest is that there is no fee. After the protest has been serviced to the applicant will usually have a chance to comment on it before the examiner makes a decision. Protests should only be used when the issue at stake is the patentability of the subject matter. They may not be used when the issue at stake involves fraud or inequitable conduct. Pre-issuance submissions. A pre-issuance submission provides a mechanism for third parties to submit patents, publish patent applications, or other printed publications of potential relevance to the examination of a patent application. If accepted, the disclosure of relevance will be included into the record of the patent application. This new provision is effective September 16, 2012, and will apply to any patent application. A concise explanation of the asserted relevance of each document submitted may be included along with a listing of the patents, published patent applications, or other printed publications of relevance. The concise explanation cannot propose the rejection of the claims. Instead, it should only include facts explaining how the item is relevant to the examination of the application. Any member of the public may file a third-party submission. This includes corporations and private individuals. However, the applicant or any person with a duty to disclose information may not send in a pre-issuance submission. Individuals with a duty to disclose are already bound to disclose all presently known information about the patentability of the subject matter within the application. A pre-issuance submission may be made in any utility, design, or plant application. They may also be entered into any continuing application. These submissions may be made by the later of 6 months after the date of publication or the date of a first office action, or before the date of a notice of allowance, if earlier. Reexamination. If you have found prior art that you believe may render the subject matter of an already issued patent unpatentable, you may file a reexamination. For a reexamination, the evidence is limited to patents and printed publications only. The America Invents Act, or AIA, also expanded on this to include written statements of a patent owner filed in a proceeding before a federal court or the USPTO regarding the scope of any claim of the patent. The grounds of a reexamination are limited to issues concerning the patentability of the subject matter. Issues of fraud and inequitable conduct are never appropriate matters for a reexamination. Anyone may request a reexamination. Any member of the public, including the patent owner or even corporate or government entities. However, if a reexamination is initiated by anyone other than the patent owner, the reexamination will need to be serviced to the owner. The person requesting the reexamination may opt to keep his or her identity secret. Reexaminations may be requested at any time during the period of enforceability, provided a substantial new question of patentability is presented. The period of enforceability includes the patent's full term, plus another 6 years after the patent expires. Re-examination requests must include a copy of every publication, written statement by the patent owner, or patent that brings up a substantial new question of patentability, also known as SNQ. This means that the prior art already used by the examiner during the prosecution may not be cited in the re-examination proceeding. It must be new. In addition, the person filing the re-examination must include a fee along with the appropriate paperwork. Supplemental examination. 35 U.S.C. 257 provides for supplemental examination of an issued patent. This provision is effective September 16, 2012, and will apply to any patent issued before, on, or after the effective date. A supplemental examination may be used by the patent owner to ask the PTO to consider information that a competitor might raise against the patent during litigation. A request for supplemental examination must be filed by the patent owner and must request that the office consider, reconsider, or correct information believed to be relevant to the patent, in accordance with such requirements as the director may establish. The information that forms the basis of the request is not limited to patents and printed publications and may include other issues, like issues involved with the specification, including the written description, enablement, and best mode. The standard for granting the request is whether one or more items of information raises a substantial new question of patentability, or SNQ, which requires a showing that a reasonable examiner would consider the item of information important in determining the patentability of the claims. Within 3 months after the receipt of a request meeting office requirements, the office will conduct the supplemental examination and will conclude the examination by using a certificate indicating whether the information presented in the request raises an SNQ. If an SNQ is raised by one or more items of information in the request, re-examination will be ordered and will be conducted according to ex parte re-examination procedures, except the patent owner will not have the right to file a statement on the questions. The supplemental examination procedure may be beneficial over an ex parte re-examination because information in a supplemental examination is not limited to patents and printed publications. So that means the patent owner may submit a wider range of documents. They are also faster. If the request does not raise an SNQ of patentability, the USPTO will issue a certificate indicating that no further proceedings will take place. Interference. Interferences will be held for applications and patents having an effective filing date before March 16, 2013. Applications filed after this date are not eligible for interference proceedings. Interferences may occur between a pending application and one or more other pending applications, or a pending application and one or more unexpired patents. Interferences are held when the filing dates are so close together that there is a possibility that the first to file for particular claims may not be the first inventor. They only apply to applications filed before the first-to-invent system switched to the first-to-file system. There are two types of interferences, those between two applications and those between an application and a patent. Interferences between two applications are normally instigated by the examiner. If there is only a difference of 6 months between the filing dates of two applications that claim identical subject matter, an examiner will provoke an interference. Interferences involving an application and a patent are normally provoked by the applicant. In these instances, the patent usually only recently issued, so the applicant never found it in his or her examination search. The interfering subject matter or claims between the two applications or the application and the patent are referred to as the count. The two opposing parties in an interference attempt to show that they first reduced the invention to practice. Whoever can prove that they made the invention workable first usually wins in an interference. The winning party of the interference is not denied anything he or she was in possession of prior to the interference, nor does he or she acquire any additional rights as a result of the interference. The winner just gets to either continue along with their examination, if it was an application, or live out the patent term, if it was a patent. The loser of an interference may appeal to the Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit or file a civil action in a U.S. District Court. Interferences are replaced by derivation proceedings as of March 16, 2013, as outlined in the America Invents Act, or AIA. The AIA provides for derivation proceedings and eliminates the interference practice for applications and patents having an effective filing date on or after March 16, 2013, with a few exceptions. Derivation proceedings. Derivation proceedings were created to ensure that the first person to file an application is actually a true inventor of the subject matter claimed in the application. They ensure that a person will not be able to obtain a patent for an invention that he did not actually invent. If a dispute arises as to which of the two applicants is a true inventor, it will be resolved through a derivation proceeding conducted by the board. A derivation proceeding is a new trial proceeding conducted at the board to determine whether an inventor named in an earlier application derived the claim invention from an inventor named in the petitioner's application, and the earlier application claiming such invention was filed without authorization. An applicant subject to the first inventor to file provisions may file a petition to institute a derivation proceeding only within 1 year of the first publication of a claim to an invention that is the same or substantially the same as the earlier application's claim to the invention. The petition must be supported by substantial evidence that the claimed invention was derived from an inventor named in the petitioner's application. There are a few criteria for the petition for a derivation proceeding. These include that the petitioner must have had at least one claim that is the same or very close to the same as the later filed claimed invention. The petition must also show that the inventor of the later filed claimed invention did not authorize the filing of the earlier application claiming the invention. Lastly, the petition must show why the later filed claimed invention is the same or substantially the same as the earlier filed invention. The procedure for derivation proceedings took effect on March 16, 2013. AIA New Trial Proceedings. There are a few additional proceedings added in by the America Invents Act, or AIA, that we will discuss briefly here. These include the post-grant review, inter partes review, and covered business method review. The post-grant review is a new trial proceeding conducted at the board to review the patentability of one or more claims in a patent to determine if they are invalid. Post-grant review process begins with a third party filing a petition on or prior to the date that is 9 months after the grant of the patent or issuance of a reissue patent. The patent owner may file a preliminary response to the petition. A post-grant review may be instituted upon a showing that it is more likely than not that at least one claim challenged is unpatentable. If the proceeding is instituted and not dismissed, a final determination by the board will be issued within 1 year, extendable for good cause by 6 months. The procedure for conducting post-grant review will take effect on September 16, 2012, and generally applies to patents issuing from applications subject to first inventor to file provisions of the AIA. Inter partes review is a new trial proceeding conducted at the board to review the patentability of one or more claims in a patent only on a ground that could be raised under 35 U.S.C. 102 or 103 and only on the basis of prior art consisting of patents or printed publications. The inter partes review process begins with a third party, a person who is not the owner of the patent, filing a petition after the later of either 9 months after the grant of the patent or issuance of a reissue patent, or, if a post-grant review is instituted, the termination of the post-grant review. The patent owner may file a preliminary response to the petition. An inner parts review may be instituted upon a showing that there is a reasonable likelihood that the petitioner would prevail with no respect to at least one claim challenged. If the proceeding is instituted and not dismissed, a final determination by the board will be issued within 1 year, extendable for good cause by 6 months. The procedure for conducting inter partes review will take effect on September 16, 2012, and applies to any patent issued before, on, or after September 16, 2012. Covered Business Method Review. The Transitional Program for Covered Business Method Patents, also called TPCBM, is a new trial proceeding conducted at the board to review the patentability of one or more claims in a covered business method patent. TBCBM proceedings employ the standards and procedures of a post-grant review with certain exceptions. For example, for first-to-invent patents, only a subset of prior art is available to support the petition. Further, a person may not file a petition for a TPCBM proceeding unless the person or the person's real party in interest has been sued for infringement of the patent or charged with infringement under the patent. The procedure for conducting TPCBM review will take effect on September 16, 2012, but only applies to covered business method patents. The program will sunset for new TPCBM petitions on September 16, 2020.